Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, July 9th. So Trump's tax returns and the Supreme Court, two cases. Trump versus Vance, that's Cy Vance, the Manhattan DA. The court ruled that a subpoena against a sitting president does not have to meet a special standard just because he's a sitting president. The court ruled 7-2 in favor of the New York DA, the Manhattan DA, with only Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissenting. Case two, Trump versus Mazars, addressed whether or not congressional subpoenas may be enforceable in requesting Trump's financial records. The court ruled 7-2 again, but this time deciding that Congress must meet a four-factor test first, which will mean that the case is going back to the lower courts for now. So that's mixed. We'll get it explained here. It's been a years-long fight by Congress and prosecutors to unveil the last 8 years of Trump's tax returns and financial records, but we're not at the finish line yet, folks, even though we have a Supreme Court decision. With us now, Jamie Floyd, WNYC's legal editor and host of All Things Considered, and Andrea Bernstein, author of the book, American Oligarchs, the Kushners, the Trumps, and the Marriage of Money and Power, and co-host of the WNYC ProPublica podcast, Trump Inc., which looks specifically at the intersection of Trump's financial interests and the national interest. Hi, Jamie. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, Brian. Hello.
So, Jamie, would it be accurate to say that Trump lost against the Manhattan DA, but won against the House of Representatives?
I'm seeing all different kinds of analyses all around the legal brain trust in our region and nationwide. Some people are saying it's split in that way. The way I see it, Brian, is that both of these decisions are short-term wins for Trump, but long-term losses for him, because what we have is a delay, most certainly in both cases through the election. But I think eventually, in both cases, the court is saying he's going to have to turn this stuff over. That's how I see it. But certainly you could say a loss in Vance and a win in the congressional cases. And we can parse it out more if you'd like.
Well, let's parse out what would happen next in court in Manhattan, because there are more hoops that the DA would have to jump through to actually get the tax returns released. They're just not constitutional hoops that the Supreme Court cleared the way of today, right?
That's right. That's right. The Chief Justice wrote this opinion, and this was a clearer opinion, a clearer case, I think, a bigger loss for Trump, President Trump. But the case clearly says that the president is a citizen like the rest of us, and is subject to the judicial system and the criminal process. And I the way he opens the case is the opinion is pretty powerful. Quote, "In our judicial system, the public has a right to every man's evidence." And he goes on to hold that Article 2 and the Supremacy Clause, Article 2 regarding the constitutional right to seek evidence, do not categorically preclude or require a heightened standard for the issuance of a state criminal subpoena of a sitting president. And of course, the president had argued that he was immune, absolutely immune, and Andrea is going to weigh in on this, I know, from any investigation while he's a sitting president. And the Chief Justice finds, quote, "We cannot conclude that absolute immunity is necessary or appropriate under Article 2 or the Supremacy Clause." And then the Chief takes pains to note, quote, "Our dissenting colleagues agree." So in the end, this case goes back to New York, goes back to the district attorney. The lower court, Brian, had written a 72-page opinion finding that Cyrus Vance could proceed. And essentially, the court, the Supreme Court of the United States, is agreeing with that lower court that had written that the efforts of Donald Trump to avoid this subpoena were, quote, repugnant. So that's where we stand in the Vance case today.
So, Andrea, for you as the Trump's finances wonk, What is D.A. Vance looking for? What are you looking for at Trump Inc. to actually get revealed here if the D.A. succeeds in proceeding?
Well, I mean, I think I see it a little differently from Jamie. I thought that Trump v. Vance was a pretty resounding rebuke of Donald Trump, because there was never any argument that there would be a dispute about the subpoena and the scope of subpoena and that could be negotiated. Everybody agreed about that. What was at issue here is that Trump's lawyers actually said in the Court of Appeals in this case, a president can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not be investigated as long as he is sitting president. And today, Brett Kavanaugh, the newest member of the Supreme Court, said, in so many words, no one is above the law. And that is a pretty big rebuke of the guy that just put him in his Supreme Court seat.
And so, Gorsuch, too, right? Gorsuch, too. So both of Trump's appointees.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, I agree with Jamie that, I mean, it sort of depends what you mean by when. If your meaning is, can this be adjudicated and settled before November? The answer may be no. But can Trump be held account criminally if he is sitting president, if he were to win a second term? The answer to that is yes, potentially. I mean, if Vance were to have a case. Now, that doesn't mean we, the public, journalists, are going to see the tax returns. I think the congressional case, I mean, what's interesting about the congressional case as I think about it is Trump presented a sui generis unique example to the court, because we've never had a sitting president with such extensive business and personal records while he's also been running this country. And that's why Congress is seeking this information, ultimately implicated the Supreme Court in making the decision. And the Supreme Court didn't rule, as it could have, and as from the arguments seemed might happen, Congress cannot subpoena a president. It just said it has to apply a test and put constraints around it. So
yeah, and I think maybe we should lay out what that second case was and not assume that our listeners understand the congressional case. But I also think, Andrea, maybe you misunderstood me. I'm saying very clearly that the U.S. Supreme Court pretty much smacked down Donald Trump here, and he lost in the Vance case. It's very clearly a loss for Donald Trump. We're not going to see these documents anytime soon. It just goes back to a grand jury proceeding, and that's all secret. But it was not a win for Donald Trump on the Vance case. The congressional case is another matter.
So talk about the congressional case, Jamie. This four-factor test, because they didn't give Trump a win in the sense that he's immune from a congressional subpoena either, right?
Right. Well, this is the Trump v. Mazars case. Now, that's the same accounting firm involved with the Vance matter. It also involves Deutsche Bank. These cases were all consolidated, even though the congressional subpoena is something entirely different, as Andrea suggests. And in this case, Roberts finds not that, as Andrea points out, not that you cannot subpoena a sitting president, but that they simply have not taken adequate account of the separation of powers in the court below. And then the court goes on, as Andrea points out, to issue this four-factor test. And so the important takeaway is that the court does not find that Congress overstepped in this case. And Justice Roberts again writes the opinion. It is again 7-2. 7-2 with the same two dissenters, Alito and Thomas, and he rejects the heightened standard that the president's attorneys had argued for, that it would be necessary for Congress to show a rigorous, strict standard to get access to the president's papers. So Roberts lays out a four-factor test in Mazars that will have to be applied now in the lower courts in order for Congress to proceed with the subpoenas. So this is a little bit of a win for Donald Trump in this case. Mm-hmm. This is my assessment, because now he can keep it all tangled up going forward in the courts as they proceed with this four-factor test. And if you want, we can talk about the four factors. You know, it's a clean opinion. It's a short clean opinion. And as Justice Roberts points out, there's not a lot of precedent here. So they're making law as they go.
Andrea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I agree. I mean, I think the question is what is your definition of a victory here for Congress? And this Congress runs out in, what is this, July? So 6 months. There are six more months for them to do this before they would have to start the whole process again with a new Congress. And I mean, it's possible that that would happen. And I was in the courtroom in the Trump v. Deutsche Bank case, which was in New York in the Southern District. And the judge was pretty unequivocal and pretty clear that he thought that Congress should be able to go ahead with this investigation. As a matter of fact, he read his decision from the bench immediately after oral arguments, an expression of his belief that Congress should be able to investigate. And in essence, the Supreme Court agreed Congress should be able to investigate the president. So that means that going forward for future presidents, for future Congresses, you can have a situation where there is congressional oversight. Mm-hmm. Since it could have gone in another direction, that's a sort of victory for the idea of oversight. Mm-hmm. And that's really important right now in this era, because we have a president who absolutely rejects any kind of oversight, any kinds of checks and balances. He fires his inspector generals, he resists subpoenas, he doesn't cooperate with investigations. And this court said, well, if you put a fence around it, the president, a president, does have to submit to forms of oversight and investigation.
And wow, our caller board has exploded with listener questions. Let's get a couple in here. David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Hi there, Brian. Hi, Jamie. Hi, Andrea. It's great to hear all of you guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there. I'm really curious to hear how you think that the different sides are going to spin this, especially how the administration, the Trump administration, might spin these decisions to try and make it look like a victory for them.
All right. Andrea, you're the legal analyst next to Jamie. I mean, you're the political analyst, I meant to say, next to Jamie, who's the legal analyst. So, Andrea, go for that one.
Well, I think that we're already seeing some reaction. So Cy Vance called this a tremendous victory for the rule of law. And the president has already taken to Twitter to talk about presidential harassment. What's very, very interesting is that the court really rejected this idea of presidential harassment. It came up a lot in the arguments, whether the district attorney or state prosecutors in general or members of Congress would use their unlimited powers just to make life difficult for a president. And the court, especially in the Vance case, just really summarily rejected that. I've reached out to the various congressional committees that issued the subpoenas, and I haven't heard anything officially, but unofficially, I'm hearing that some sense of this is still alive, we can still go to the courts, we can still craft a subpoena, we might get some information.
But politically, I mean, it strikes me on first blush as this isn't going to move the needle one way or the other in the presidential election, because the rest of the process to actually get the returns released is going to take until after November. Andrea, very briefly, any reason to disagree with that?
Only if you think that getting the tax returns would be dispositive, or some criminal proceeding would be dispositive in the election.
They're not coming out before the election in a court process unless they are leaked. And Trump tweeted, to get back to the caller's point, this is all a political prosecution. Courts in the past have given broad deference, all caps, but not me, he wrote. All of which is incorrect. In all of the cases, and there are very few, as Justice Roberts wrote in his opinion, you know, he said one case every century is very little precedent for us to rely upon. But in the Nixon case, in the Clinton case, those were unanimous decisions against those presidents. So Trump has actually fared better, because this was a 7-2 decision in each of these cases. So he should stop complaining and read the law.
And maybe some of his most ardent supporters who are already aggrieved will be a little more aggrieved. But I don't know, that's going to change the election. Lisa in Northport, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm feeling a little positive today because I do think that both rulings were overall positive, especially Andrea's point that this states unequivocally that Congress has the right to carry out oversight, because that's just been a really horrific insinuation that this president has been promoting. And but I would like to know what the four factors are. The four factors that Congress has to meet in order to proceed with the subpoenas.
All right, Jamie, she's teeing you up.
Yeah, that's and I got to do it fast. And somebody asked on Twitter, I was just about to try and tweet it out as well. So quickly, first, the courts have to assess whether the legislative purpose warrants a significant step of involving a president and his papers in a subpoena. Second, the scope has to be as narrow as possible for one branch of government to access another branch of government in the subpoena process. Third, the courts have to monitor to make sure the subpoena advances a valid congressional purpose. And fourth, the court should assess whether the burden imposed on a president by a subpoena, particularly when it stems from a rival political branch, is not overstepping. So those are the four. I really truncated it. It's in the opinion if you want to read it. And then he finishes snarkily by saying, you know, other considerations are probably out there, but one case every century does not afford much precedence for an exhaustive list. Right, so we're giving you this one. Please use it.
But if I'm understanding you right, Congress will still have to prove to a lower court that they're not just going on a political fishing expedition.
Correct.
That they have a legitimate legislative purpose in seeking
Precisely. In this case, as well as future cases.
David in Westchester. Let me get one more caller in here. David in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm wondering about the law that was passed in New York State about a year ago to make New York State tax records available to congressional investigating committees. Is that superseded by this? It seems like the timing, if this is not going to come out before the election,
politically not that relevant. But that's a great question. Who wants it? Andrea, on the New York state law that the state can compel the state tax returns, which would show most of everything, to be revealed?
I have, frankly, lost the thread on that. My understanding is it's on hold and it's on a separate track.
That is correct. And it would work. That's a Tish James endeavor, and it would work in tandem with the anything that Cy Vance or anything that would be happening federally. It's an effort to be an end run around what Donald Trump has tried to do. And New York is not the only state that is endeavoring to do this. California is also trying to put the same legislation in effect. But I think I'm not following California's as closely, but I think that is also on a slow track. And thanks for the caller reminding us to take another look at what's going on, both in New York and in California.
I want to say something very quickly, which is we know how Donald Trump views investigations because of Ukraine. He views them as political tools. And the Supreme Court in Trump v. Vance today said, no, a prosecutor can have a legitimate investigation of a president. It doesn't have to be viewed in those terms.
Thank you both for speed reading, but detail reading. Those always don't go together so well, but you did it. This decision this morning and coming on with us, WNYC's legal analyst, legal editor, Jamie Floyd, who will be back to host All Things Considered today, and Andrea Bernstein from Trump, Inc., and author of the book, American Oligarchs, the Kushners, the Trumps, and the Money, the Marriage of Money and Power. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.